school threats continue to disrupt classroom activity, and this latest one in Shaler, Paul, a little shocking at the age of the student.
An elementary school student, a girl, who police say admits to making numerous threats. We don't know if this is connected directly with what the FBI has been looking into, if she's responsible for this vast number of threats that were made, but good gosh.
There was a time where...
I mean, just not what you expect from an elementary school student, right?
Exactly. That's my point, especially a young lady. Now, you have a time now where social media is so accessible to everybody, and it comes with a responsibility. And what a lot of young people don't realize is, in many cases, it's trackable, too.
Listen to this list, Larry. This is the list of schools reporting threats. Armstrong, Butler area, Cannon McMillan, Elwood City, Hampton Township, Ligonier Valley, McKeesport, North Hills, Penn Manor, Pine Richland, Stowe Rocks, West Mifflin, Woodland Hills, and, of course, Shaler.
It's a big deal. And there was a time when we would not report threats to a school, you know, the bomb threats in particular, on TV and radio.
Yeah. And now we're at that point where it's become news. I would also say that it strikes me as somewhat similar to the people who bring guns to the airport, because your action by bringing a gun to an airport affects everyone who's trying to get on a plane at that moment. Just like the threats that are made online about school shootings affect everyone in that school district or at that particular school.
So it's a common occurrence. Just a list you gave us now. This is just today in the past, you know, since school started.
Yeah, this week. Yep.
Yeah, just this week.
Yep.
All right. American Airlines is expected to formally announce today around 1 o'clock that they have a major expansion in their company, somewhere in the neighborhood of 500 jobs. Some of those jobs would be here at Pittsburgh International with an expansion for their mechanic and service center.
I was going to guess at that the maintenance base here would be beefed up some. I think they're at capacity at their main maintenance base in Tulsa. I think that they're kind of maxed out there, if the last I heard about it. But that's good news, because those are good paying jobs. The people who work on the airplanes get good money.
Yeah, they posted some of the jobs, and again, they'll make it official today, but this is good news for the airport, because we're expanding, as you know, and at some time next year, there will be the new Pittsburgh International Airport.
It sure looks good from what I've seen so far.
And American Airlines, again, expanding.
Where are they making this announcement? In Dallas, or?
1 o'clock today. I think they're making an announcement here as well.
Oh, great.
So, and this is on top, and you heard in our business report and update, there's a company locating near the airport that's going to do this, sanitize these high-end instruments with this new technology. So job expansion is always welcome here, especially around the airport and that corridor where it has been a bright spot and continues to grow. That said, what else is on people's minds this morning? Francine.
Yeah, a big storm that made landfall down in the Gulf Coast of Louisiana, south of New Orleans, just a little bit west of the city itself. And it moved inland quickly and over Lake Pontchartrain, and now it is moving into the Mississippi, Louisiana area north of New Orleans, and heading pretty much on a line straight north. And it's down to, what, a tropical depression now, right?
And we're not going to see any rain from this at least until Tuesday, so it's going to remain dry. We're going to check in with meteorologist Joe Lundberg in the next half hour and in the next 15 minutes to a reporter down in Baton Rouge. But from WAFB-TV, reporter Ethan Tuttle is in Thibodeau, Louisiana.
They experienced a lot of rainfall, obviously, coming off of Francine on the front end and the back end as well. Getting dark out here, obviously, and not a lot of power, obviously, so the lights are low. But the gas station here is flooded just about all the way up to the pumps.
And for those that don't know, and you live there in New Orleans, Paul, the city itself is under sea level.
Well, that's New Orleans, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of people shake their heads. Well, how does that work?
Well, they have an elaborate pumping system So when even in heavy rainstorms, they can pump as much as 2 inches of water off the streets per hour. So that's how it works. You see these gigantic pipes running all over the city where they can pump the rain or flood water out. Thibodeau, by the way, is in, you know, that's in the Cajun country. Houma, Thibodeau, that's where you really bump into the Acadian lifestyle. They're wonderful people, and that's all low-lying country as well. It floods real quickly. Let's check this out real quick. David Parkinson with CBS, he's a meteorologist on the landfall.
Louisiana bringing impacts throughout southern Louisiana, not just of storm surge, which could be as high as 4 to 6 feet on Lake Pontchartrain and 5 to 10 feet along the Louisiana coast. But then now, as the storm comes inland, you'll see storm surges as far away as Mobile and the Mississippi coast, which could be 3 to 5 feet.
So that gives you some idea how big it is. And in terms of the rainfall, again, they're predicting 8 to 12 inches, depending on the area. And as it moves inland, those numbers start to drop pretty quickly.
And we'll check in with meteorologist Joe Lundberg, get an update on all things weather in the next half hour. And we'll take you live to Baton Rouge coming up on the Big K Morning Show. And a shout out to the Broadhurst family that owns Eaton Park, 75th anniversary year. And I mentioned to you, Paul, they have this anniversary menu. It's pretty extensive.
I saw the new menu the other day, and they've got a couple of sandwiches with French fries and coleslaw on them. Or French fries. At least I saw the French fry. I assume there was coleslaw as well.
Yeah, and it's, by the way, it's National Chocolate Milkshake Day. So
The only thing I like more than a chocolate milkshake is a chocolate malt.
On a day like this?
Yes.
This would be good. Maybe lunch, maybe dinner, maybe after dinner. Get a chocolate milkshake from Eaton Park.
See, now I'm going to have to go do this.
The place for smiles, Paul.
Well, wherever, you know. I haven't had a milkshake in a long time, but the way you sold it makes it sound so good.
It is really good. Get the whipped cream with the cherry on top. Go for it. If you're going to go, go.
All the way.
Hey, listen, this is, historical, this spacewalk with just private citizens?
Yes.
Testing spacesuits.
Elon Musk's SpaceX, right?
Right.
He's got two people are making the first private spacewalk ever. It's underway right now. He posted on X earlier this morning, Larry, a picture of two of the people on the mission, both of them women, wearing these new spacesuits that don't look anything like the ones we grew up looking at.
No, they don't.
Fascinating.
So, SpaceX Polaris Dawn crew attempting the first commercial spacewalk. I don't know that I would feel really comfortable going out. You know, you've seen those movies where they become untethered and then drift.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, they've got pictures of the inside of the capsule here with the crew. I just think this is really fascinating. This is what we used to pay attention to when NASA was, you know, running the show on this. This is really interesting. I mean, wasn't all that long ago you and I were talking about William Shatner's trip into space, brief though it was.
He was so emotional, he burst into tears. It was that impressive, he said. It changed his life, changed his perspective of the world based on seeing it from that advantage point, and that wasn't as high as these guys. This is led by a billionaire commander who bought his way, privately funded spacewalk, highly risky, still considered to be. So,
Larry, just to give you an idea of where Elon Musk is coming from, the man who's behind SpaceX and all of this, he posted this morning in the last few minutes a couple of things here. One of them is, he said, imagine exploring the stars in our galaxy and finding out what happened over billions of years on billions of planets. When we go out there to explore the galaxy, we might find many dead one-planet civilizations that never made it to the next planet. We will try to decode their writings just like we did with Linear B and hieroglyphics from past civilizations on Earth. He's a fascinating guy. And he really does feel very strongly about colonizing Mars.
There it is. All right.
So that's his mission.
Jared Isaacman is bankrolling and commanding today's mission, made a fortune in technology and fighter jets. He's a pretty young guy, too. So we'll be following the... He calls himself a space geek. But now he'll be a spaceman.
Good for him.
Which is, instead of a derogatory thing to be called, it's... I don't know, man. When you got that kind of money and you want to do stuff like that, knock yourself out. That's pretty cool.
A few years ago, we were talking about people like Richard Branson, who was doing things like these unbelievably long balloon and other kind of flying around. But this is on a whole new level.
Francine hitting the Louisiana coast as a Category 2 hurricane and moving quickly to the north, but maybe not quickly enough. Joining us from WBRZ Television in Baton Rouge is Abigail Whittem. Good morning, Abigail.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. What are you facing this morning down there on the coast?
Well, there's just lots of debris, fallen trees. Crews have been working all night trying to get those trees out of the way. There are some roadways completely underwater due to some of the rivers that we have out here in Louisiana. But other than that, everyone's pretty safe, so that's good.
What about power outages, Abigail, especially in the Baton Rouge region?
Oh, yeah. So I'm actually in Livingston Parish right now covering some of the damage. They have nearly 24,000 customers out of power. So power outages definitely happening here.
And Baton Rouge is north and west of New Orleans by about, 50, 60 miles. So that gives you some idea of how far inland people are losing power.
Oh, yeah. Throughout, basically all the south region of Louisiana is out of power. So those generators are coming in handy today.
Yeah, I would imagine you, especially in that area, have to be prepared because you're going to get storms periodically. It's just the reality of living there along the coast, right?
Oh, yeah. I would say this is not our first rodeo. And I'd honestly say this is one of the least damaging hurricanes that I've ever been alive to see. So that's a good thing.
That's what I was thinking when I was looking at the weather channel this morning and then the National Hurricane Center. I thought, thankfully, this isn't going to be anything like a major hurricane.
Oh, yeah, thankfully not. I think when it landed last night, it ended up being a Category 2, but still not much damage. And like I said, just a lot of debris on the ground, but they are working hard, been working since late last night, getting all this situated. So I think that we're in good hands down here in the south.
Well, Abigail, we appreciate the update. Glad to know you're safe and folks down there are dealing with it pretty good. Appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you all so much. And thanks for checking in on us. We appreciate it.
All right. Abigail Whittem with WBRZ Television in Baton Rouge.
Listening to her talk reminds me of how charming people can be in the south in my years there. Lighthearted, they're just...
Yeah.
And a lot of people had parties last night, by the way,
and
in the New Orleans.
Explain to people, they have hurricane parties.
That's right.
This is also typical along the East Coast, too.
One of the sayings in New Orleans about the city is they call it the city that care forgot. In other words, leave your cares behind and enjoy life as you go one day at a time. And that's the way they go at it. So and the bars don't close in New Orleans, by the way.
Ever?
No. There are some that close, but they can stay open all round the clock. So
I've never, as much as I've been fortunate enough to travel for different reasons, football, whatever, pleasure or otherwise, I've never been to Baton Rouge or New Orleans.
I highly recommend the experience. It's a different culture. And in fact, New Orleans, you feel like you're in a different country. Really,
yeah, the French influence, right?
Yeah, and also there's a Spanish influence there. And here's the crazy part of it, Larry. The crazy part of it is one of their biggest parades of the year is St. Patrick's Day. They call it the Irish and Italian Parade. Oh, yeah, the Irish. In fact, there's neighborhoods in New Orleans where on one side of the street you'll have a Catholic church that was built for the Irish people in that neighborhood, and right across the street another one where the Italians attended church.
Well, they had the similar thing in Bloomfield.
Exactly.
Many years,
right?
Italian and German.
Getting back quickly, if I could, to the rain forecast, and just give you some idea of who's going to catch the rain in the next 24, 36 hours. Jackson, Mississippi, Memphis, Tennessee, Birmingham, Alabama are in some of the highest rainfall totals. And then north of there, you're talking about Nashville and to the west, Little Rock. That'll give you some idea. And even in Atlanta, they're going to catch some of this today. Tallahassee in the Panhandle in Florida.
Well, coming up next, we're going to talk to our meteorologist, Joe Lundberg, and find out, are we going to get any residual effects of this storm? Or when, for that matter, will it rain? Because according to the forecast I'm looking for AccuWeather, it's not going to rain through the weekend. Stick around. We got you covered on the Big K Morning Show. Hour. A chance for you to win tickets to the Outlaw Music Festival. That'll be Saturday, Pavilion at Star Lake, and it is a superstar-studded lineup, including Willie Nelson. Also, Bob Dylan. You've got John Mellencamp, Robert Plant, and Alison Krauss, and others. It's going to be a full day of music at Star Lake.
The lineup of superstars.
Yeah. I was a big Led Zeppelin fan. But it's interesting, Robert Plant has, for a long time now, been doing shows with Alison Krauss, more of a folksy kind of thing. That he almost, when he talks about Led Zeppelin, it's like another life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For him.
Yeah, I could see that.
You know, almost to the point where it doesn't, he said, doesn't feel like it was me. Like he was young and they were so big and, you know, extraordinarily successful.
His solo career interested me as well. Back in the 80s, he released a song that became a chart hit. Remember Big Log?
Yeah.
Kind of a slow-moving, hypnotic-sounding, but that vocal style of his stands right out. You knew it was him right away.
So last night, speaking of music, Taylor Swift made VMA history on MTV. Dominated the award show, took home 7 trophies. She's now tied with Beyonce for the most wins. 5 of her wins were for Fortnite, featuring Post Malone. And they accepted the award last night, but paid tribute to the victims of 9/11.
I've just been thinking about what happened 23 years ago. Everyone who lost a loved one and everyone that we lost. And that is the most important thing about today, and everything that happens tonight falls behind that.
Yeah, 23 years ago yesterday, of course, 9/11, and it was a very somber day for many people, including here where Flight 93 crashed into that field in Somerset County. And also saw just the visual, the one takeaway for me yesterday, because I hate when politics becomes part of something like this. But I will say there was a moment where Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, the mayor of New York, is standing with Donald Trump together. And Harris,
I saw the
and
picture.
Trump
yeah.
shook hands. Of course, people were yelling stuff. But the fact that in that moment, we got to put our differences aside for the greater respect for what the day meant.
Mm-hmm.
And I
think you said yesterday that fits perfectly in all of this. That's the last time that the country really felt, or at least we thought, that the country was united.
Yeah, I saw a video, and I've seen it before, where George Bush at a Yankees game was after 9/11. They said, we want America to return to as normal as we can while we work on tracking down the terrorists. So baseball, you know, is mm-hmm. so iconic and for that reason. And he went out and threw the first pitch and got such an ovation. And he said, I just wanted to make sure I threw a strike. And he did.
He got it done.
Which
yeah.
is and we've seen these first pitch failures over the years. But in that moment.
We were talking Yankee Stadium here. This is not an easy crowd to please.
Right.
They're tough critics.
They don't
there,
like anybody.
You know, and for him to go out and nail the pitch and have the support of the people there.
Yeah,
I mean,
cool.
It was electric.
While we have enjoyed sunshine and dry weather, we actually need a little rain. Doesn't look like we'll get any through the weekend, but the residual effects of Francine, maybe, but it won't be over the weekend. Meanwhile, Paul Rasmussen, our anchor man, spent a lot of time in New Orleans, and so I asked Paul, who do you know down there that we can talk to about the situation with Francine hitting the coast as a Category 2 hurricane? Blair, Coleman, welcome to KDKA. I understand you're a friend of Paul's.
I don't claim it in public, but yeah. Very good. Good friend. Glad he's up there and out of our hair. No, I kid, of course. We love Paul down here. We miss him.
Yeah, Blair lives in an area of New Orleans called River Ridge, which is near the Mississippi River and is a fairly nice neighborhood. What's going on in that area of New Orleans this morning, Blair?
Well, it's still dark, so they tell us not to go out, of course. But the water around me has receded off my patio. It was like millimeters coming into the apartment. The entire breezeway was a little bayou streaming that was nearly coming in through the front door. So luckily didn't get any. And the strange thing about it, I didn't lose power. Power here goes off as it sprinkles. And there's a big stink about Energy Louisiana with always going out. And I never lost it, so I was fortunate with that. But they still have, at the peak of the storm last night at about, I think it was around 9 o'clock, they had 350,000 people on the south and north shore of Lake Pontchartrain right here in the city and across the lake. That was 350,000. That's dropped. They've gotten power back on, and now only 297,000, I think they said this morning. We're still without power.
And so. Blair, is the storm itself is now north of Lake Pontchartrain, back over land, right?
Right. It's up near Macomb, Mississippi right now. It stopped here by me. Yeah, I mean, it was storming and stopped. It was like you were in the eye of the hurricane, but it never started raining again. It was mostly the northern sector storm, but it came down where I was. We had about 6.5 inches of rain in 4 hours.
Man, that's a lot of rain. Blair, how long you been living in that area?
All my life, basically. I've left a couple of times.
How do you deal with the threat of this periodically? Like, you know it's going to happen. You're on the Gulf Coast.
You hope and you pray that you're going to miss it, and you don't want to see somebody else get it, but you always hope it goes somewhere else. And it's just, it's difficult, because... I've taken some medication that I have to have refrigerated. So then I've got to try to figure out what I'm going to do with that. So I've got like seven gallon bags of ice in my freezer just in case I need it. And with all the water, you couldn't go anywhere. I mean, Jefferson Parish is basically all the streets, all the drainage canals that pump into the lake. They have one pumping station that pumps into the river. For whatever reason, all Jefferson Parish basically was underwater street-wise. A lot of the houses took water, but they really not going to know about the businesses and everything until the sun comes up. And I'm staying home. I'm not going playing around in that stuff.
Well, Blair, I'm glad to hear you're doing well, and I'm glad that the water stayed out of the apartment. Keep everybody in line down there for me, will you?
Sure will. It's great talking to you guys.
All right. Yeah, man. Any friend of Paul's is suspect, so it's nice to talk to you.
All right, Mr. Larry. Just take him and have him a Primanti sandwich.
There you go. Come visit us.
I know he's missing all the poor boys down here.
Absolutely right.
He often talks about the cuisine in New Orleans. So, Blair, you take care of yourself.
I'll have to send you some seasoning up that way, Larry.
Sounds good to me. Blair Coleman.
All right, good deal. I'll talk to you guys later.
Thanks, Blair.
River Ridge, you say, near the Mississippi.
Yeah, River Ridge. That's a nice area in Jefferson Parish, right next to Orleans Parish. And I would just like to throw this in. I forgot to say this earlier. Blair was one of the great top 40 disc jockeys at a legendary station, WTIX, much like the KQV of Pittsburgh back in the day, for many, many years.
Yeah, I don't know how people live under that threat all the time. It would, we're kind of spoiled here because we're shielded from a lot of the extremes.
Absolutely right. That's one of the reasons I like living here so much.
And the sunshine this summer, we usually complain we don't get enough sun. Well, that hasn't been the case. And I mentioned this to you a couple of times. I've lived here all my life except for a brief stint in Florida, out of college. I can't remember a summer where we've had more sun.
I've mentioned it before, and I'll follow up on it hopefully some point today or tomorrow. We'll get in touch with the weather people and find out just how much sunshine we've had by comparison and see just how sunny it's really been.
Yeah, keep in mind that January, they told us it was the cloudiest month in recorded history in Pittsburgh.
That's right.
So, kind of strange. Hey, coming up, we're going to give you a chance to win tickets to the Outlaw Music Festival that's Saturday with the Superstars lineup. And I want you to hear from this Alaskan Airlines pilot. Remember the door that was blown off that jetliner?
Well, what he had to say about this incident really caught my attention.
The Outlaw Music Festival Pavilion at Star Lake this Saturday. And an all-star cast, including Bob Dylan. I like Bob Dylan. I saw him once in my life. It wasn't that long ago. And we were joking. We had no idea what he sang, but people loved it anyway.
Sure they did.
(laughs) 412-922-1020. You get to see Willie Nelson. You get to see Mr. Bob. Also, John Mellencamp, Robert Plant, and Alison Krauss, and a whole bunch of other musicians, too. Pick a number, Paul.
Two.
Number two. 412-922-1020. You all set, Aaron? All right. Hope you enjoy that. You talk about a big weekend in Pittsburgh. A lot of good stuff going on. A lot of fun stuff. We mentioned the North Shore, and now that show is going to draw a lot of people with a star lineup like that. Meanwhile, just released this Alaskan Air pilot who was at the helm when the door blew off.
This was that door plug. It's where a door would go in certain configurations, but this is one where they just put a plug in, and they figured that the bolts on that thing were not tightened down the way they should have been, and so that door plug flew out of the plane right off the side of the fuselage.
Unbelievable when you see it, and most people have at least seen a video of that and the hole. And normally the depressurization would suck anything inside out. So if you weren't in your seatbelt, we've seen this happen before for other reasons. Here's CBS's Chris Van Cleve.
Alaska Airlines pilot Emily Whiprude sounded the alarm. Something had gone terribly wrong.
The first indication was it was an explosion in my ears. And then a whoosh of air. My body was forced forward. And there was a loud bang.
Did you know at this point there was a hole in the airplane?
No. I didn't know that there was a hole in the airplane until we landed. It was so incredibly loud, and I remember putting the oxygen mask on and trying to transmit to ATC and wondering, why can't I hear anything?
A door panel on the Boeing 737 MAX had blown out with enough force to rip off her headset, but Whiprude says their training took over as the two pilots worked to safely land.
And I opened the flight deck door, and I saw calm, quiet, hundreds of eyes staring right back at me. And I looked at my flight attendants and I said, are you okay? And in that response, I heard hole, 4, 5 empty seats and injuries.
And are you thinking when they said empty seats that you'd lost people?
Yes. And I remember it not taking very long for us to confirm we had 177 souls on board.
That had to be an emotional roller coaster.
Yeah. I was so thankful. I was in shock, disbelief. Everybody was there.
Whiprude is back on the flight deck telling us it was very important to her to get back in the saddle. She and her captain will be honored by the Airline Pilots Association for safely landing that damaged airplane. Chris Van Cleve, CBS News, Washington.
Can you imagine just being seated in that plane and have that happen?
Terrifying. Ugh. Absolutely terrifying. It's one thing when you're at altitude. Let's say you're at 36,000 feet cruising along and everything's just fine. And then it's another thing when there's a hole in the fuselage. and you're able to look out and see just how high up you are. It's one thing when you're looking through those smaller windows in the fuselage, you get some idea of how high up it is, but I have a thing about heights. I would just, man, I don't know if I would have, wow.
What about the spacewalkers? Talk about heights. And, you know, this past weekend, I want to mention this because this was so important. It kind of got lost with all the news and the politics of what's been going on. And, of course, 9/11's remembrance yesterday is the fact that 427, U.S. Air Flight 427 that was inbound from Chicago to Pittsburgh 30 years ago over Hopewell Township near the airport, suddenly there was, and they, it took a couple of years to determine what happened, that there was a faulty, I think it was a flap on the back.
The actuator for the rudder would suddenly shift to one direction, and when the pilots would try to correct to go in the opposite direction, they were putting pressure on the pedals that steer the rudder, it would just make the problem worse.
And it wasn't the pilot's fault, but yet,
no,
you know, I knew one of the people on board, Frank Santa Maria, was a young man working for PNC Bank, and there were a number of PNC employees who were on that flight, and I also know somebody who was supposed to be on the flight who didn't make the flight, and that's been 30 years now.
But I know two people who spent a fair amount of time at the crash site. One of them was a chaplain for the people who had to, you know, sort through the wreckage, and the other one of our former coworkers, Barbara Boylan, spent a fair amount of time out there. I think David Ballarato did as well back in that time. So, yes, it seems like a long time ago, but if you went through it, from what everyone I've spoken to, it could have happened just yesterday with the way they feel about it.
And the good Dr. Mike Hutchinson of Animal General, LaSalle Plaza and Cranberry, joins us every Thursday at this time. Doc, good to see you. You can see Doc via our video at kdkradio.com with our live stream. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to see you, too. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm looking forward to the weekend. Looks like we're going to have a lot of fun on the North Shore. You got Pitt in West Virginia, the backyard brawl. You got Pirates playing at 105 at home. Then at 3:30, you got a kickoff. It's going to be wild down there. What are you doing?
Yep.
You doing something fun? Do you ever go to football games?
No, we're going to the, what is it? I think out in Ligonier they have the tug-of-wars and the pole-throwing and, you know, the old Scotland Highland games.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to go to that this weekend with the kids.
Isn't that where they throw stones?
Yeah, they throw those big poles. They look like, you know, utility poles.
Yeah, that's called a Tabor toss, right?
Yes, that's right. That's right. How you doing, Paul?
Good, thanks.
Very good. Well, let's jump into the questions today. And by the way, if you ever want to ask Dr. Mike a question, you can go to our instant access too and email us and we'll pass it along. Instant access at kdkradio.com. First one comes from Frank in Moon Township. My dog's nose is dry and cracked. What could be causing this and how can I treat it? Thanks for your help, Doc.
Yeah, unfortunately, most of the time that's either from allergies, aging, or sun exposure. I mean, that would be the three most common I can think of. And some dogs get dehydrated. They lick it like crazy. They keep licking their nose, and that can cause it. And then there's some diseases, autoimmune diseases, like lupus and pemphigus, things like that that could cause it. But for the most part, what you can do is get a dog-safe nose balm. And two of the ones that I like a lot, one is bag balm. You hear me talk about that a lot.
Right.
It works very effectively. It's got peanut oil and lanolin in it. And then another one is just you can get vitamin E oil with lanolin in it. And that is very safe and good for the nose, too. And then you just rub it on a couple times a day. And if it's not working, you should see your vet.
Do you ever hear of Zim's crack cream?
Yeah, I have.
No further
comment.
I always
go to the bag bomb because it's just like that duct tape, 1,000 uses.
I got you. I got you, Doc. Go ahead, Paul.
Oh, my. Dr. Mike, let's see here. Michelle in Moon Township says, my indoor cat seems to be losing weight despite eating normally. What could be causing this, and should I be concerned?
You know, that one, and if you could give me ages, it makes it a little bit easier. But in older cats, we think of things like hyperthyroidism, where their thyroid gland's overactive and they're hungry all the time, but they keep losing weight because their metabolic rate goes up. Diabetes can be a cause of that, where they're eating well, but yet they're losing weight. Kidney disease is very common in older cats. And I hate to say it, but cancer is too. So I would have your vet check that out, because if a cat's eating normally and losing weight, something's going on. And parasites, inflammatory bowel disease, things like that could cause nutrient malabsorption as well. So a whole bunch of things I could think of, but that cat would have to be examined.
Speaking of cats, you know, you and I have talked a lot about ticks and dogs and people. But here's a question from Alex in Swickley. What type of flea and tick protection or prevention is best for indoor-outdoor cats? I find ticks on him, and it grosses me out. Alex.
I think, Larry, you remember that when I brought in those ticks. And
oh, yeah, Paul. So John Chumway and I were here, and Doc came in studio, and he brought all these little parasites in little glass tubes.
Oh, how lovely.
Yeah, I haven't been the same since. Thanks for that.
Yeah, I know. The engorged tick looks like a grape. You know, they get so much blood flowing in them. Yeah, they're disease-caring experts, and I appreciate that question. NexGard Combo is one of the products for cats. It has a dewormer in it. It kills mites, and it kills fleas and ticks, most importantly, especially this time of year. We're at the peak season again. May and September, you know, is the peak deer tick season. So be wary when you're outside, because unfortunately you're going to get exposed if you're walking in tall grasses or into the woods. So, you know, use the old Listerine and water trick. You can spray it on your clothes. You can spray it onto your dog's coat before you go out. 9/10 of the regular Listerine, 1/10 water, and you just spray it over their coat. It's very safe, and it helps repel the fleas and ticks. It doesn't kill them necessarily, but it really can reduce the numbers. And then there's products like Revolution Plus, Bravecto, that you can save on cats. Speak to your veterinarian, and whatever they recommend, I would use. Just remember year-round protection for ticks here. Western Pennsylvania is a hotbed for tick-borne disease, so we recommend year-round protection.
Hey, Doc, just a bonus question from a family physician. He said, hey, please ask Dr. Mike, do you check for blood pressure in animals?
Yeah, of course we do. So sometimes you get dogs and cats that come in and they're just so hyper. You know, they're growling, they're very, very upset. So the blood pressure readings aren't very useful because, of course, they're high. It's that white coat syndrome when they come in. But yes, we do it all the time. If you get animals with kidney disease, we monitor the blood pressures. Yes, very, very simple procedure that we do. We check the blood pressures when we're doing surgery and things like that. So yes, we do it in animals as well. It's a very useful tool.
All right, Doc, always appreciate your insight and input. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next Thursday.
You too. It's great seeing you guys. Take
care. You too. You can see Dr. Mike on the radio. It's kind of cool. Go to kdkradio.com in our video stream.
He's sporting his Penn State hat, even though the Nittany Lions, I guess they have a break this weekend.
Already?
Yeah, they do.
That's an early buy.
I know. That could bode trouble later in the season.
What have they racked, like eighth?
Eighth this year, yeah, so far. I don't know about them yet.
All right, well, have a good weekend then without your football team playing.
Yeah.
All right, coming up, we're gonna give you a chance to, you know, we talked to Bill Hillgrove, speaking of college football. Tomorrow night, Bill Hillgrove will be inducted into Pitt's Hall of Fame, along with the late Dick Groat. And this is the first time broadcasters have ever been inducted. And we're going to talk to Bill about the backyard brawl with Paul Rasmussen at the top of this hour. I mentioned Bill Hillgrove. How about this season for Bill? And a lot of people were confused when Bill stepped aside from his play-by-play duties for 30 years with the Steelers. They just assumed he was retiring, but he didn't retire from Pitt.
And thankfully, I'm glad he didn't.
51 years as the voice of the Panthers football team. I believe he's going to be going into 56 for the basketball team. And I know he's going into the Pitt Hall of Fame tomorrow night, along with his old basketball partner, the late, great Dick Groat. And I'm looking forward to catching up with Bill and then seeing in that moment. He's got a tremendous amount of respect and support, as you can imagine, Paul. Jackie Sherrill, the legendary coach, is coming in. Tony Dorsett, Jimbo Covert, probably have more Hall of Famers in there from the NFL. So it's pretty cool. So we'll catch up with Bill.
Bill's one of those people that has the gift of when he speaks during a football game or a basketball game, his voice imparts a sense of action and excitement. It's just the way it sounds.
Yeah, I'll put a little montage for you.
Thank you.
Coming up.
Holstein in the gun on fourth down. Davis to his left. Gets the snap. Play action fake. He's back. Throws it down the field. Wide open for the grab is Kanate Mumfield, and that's a score from 37 out. He did the play action fake. Cincinnati bit, and he beat star linebacker Miller to the pylon. Fourth and two, and a touchdown for the Panthers, and we got a ball game.
The 107th edition of the Backyard Brawl is Saturday, 3:30 at Acrisure Stadium, and the voice of the Panthers in his 51st year doing football is my partner, Bill Hillgrove. Also, you can see Bill on the radio at kdkradio.com on our stream. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, partner. Look for a great one. It's two teams that, you know, are kind of still feeling their oats early in the season, which is part of the college football process. But, you know, don't look at recent form. Don't look at the last game. You look at the rivalry. And rivalry games, they generally come down to maybe the last minute, and whatever team makes the one better play than the other is probably going to win it. So I look for a great ball game.
Yeah, let's dial back, though, to Saturday in Cincinnati, down 21 with 4:50 left in the third quarter. The unthinkable happened, and the improbable certainly, and that is there was a 98.6 at that time probability that Cincinnati would win, yet the Panthers stormed back 22 unanswered points to win that game off a field goal, and the biggest come from behind win since 1971, and I think you were the color analyst back then.
That's true. Ed Conway called that game, and I remember Les Block catching a Dave Haverin pass to win it after they were down 35-10 at the half to Navy. And, of course, the year before that was the Backyard Brawl, and Pitt down 35-8, came back and won it 36-35. You know, Larry, in that game, in those days at Pitt Stadium, instead of the media rushing down to the locker room, that wasn't much room down there in Pitt Stadium. So they would feed, you know, quotes up to the press box on a PA system setup. And when there was a lull, you could hear the West Virginia fans yelling through the window for Bobby Bowden's head because of, you know, the way things happened. Well, you know, I give Bobby credit because later that winter, he's at the Thompson Club banquet in West Mifflin. Hi, I'm Bobby Bowden. I have a new book on the shelves, How to Coach the Second Half. You know, that great sense of humor carried him to the Hall of Fame. You know, there have been so many memorable games in that series. You know, if you're a Pitt fan, you remember 2007, 13-9. You know, it's amazing in football how in rivalries you can just identify the year and the game by the score. Mm. And when you say 13-9, West Virginia fans shudder and Pitt fans holler and stomp, and you know that was memorable. In 75, Tony Dorsett and Pitt were a pretty heavy favorite in Morgantown at the old Mountaineer Field, and Bill McKenzie kicked the winning field goal. Frank Cignetti Sr. was the head coach of the Mountaineers, and that was a big West Virginia win. And so there have been so many memorable ones, including a tie. I can't remember the year, somewhere in the 80s, where Eddie Fraser kicked the field goal to tie the game. And it ended, you know, with each team kissing their sister. But, you know, I look for a close one this week.
Bill, Paul Rasmussen here. Watching the game last week, I was impressed by Eli Holstein's transformation during the game from a rough start to a strong finish. And I would think that that's going to play a big role in deciding the Backyard Brawl, don't you?
Yeah, his confidence level has to be up. But, you know, you got to give him credit and that team credit for the character they displayed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've never seen a quarterback go from being a freshman to a senior in one game. And I saw that. He was a freshman in the first half, never having been in this hostile situation in the college game. And then he grew up the second half big time. then the defense fed off what the offense was able to do. And I think, you know, as you understand football, it's hand and glove. And I remember last year's game where Pitt actually intercepted late in the game a West Virginia pass, and that was on the plus side of the field, and they got no points. And, you know, so one has to feed off the other, and we'll see what happens on Saturday because, you know, you don't look at recent games. You don't look at the records. You just say, hey, it's the backyard brawl, and whoever makes one more play than the other team will probably win it.
It's one of the greatest rivalries in college football. And just a note, on the Panthers' dramatic comeback, the ACC named them Team of the Week. They recognized Running Back of the Week Desmond Reed. Kanate Mumfield is Receiver of the Week. Specialist of the Week, their kicker Ben Sauls. And back-to-back rookie awards for Eli Holstein. I can't remember one game where Pitt got that many awards from the ACC. It was pretty impressive, including Desmond Reed, who had 100 yards plus receiving, too. And as far as E.J. Borghetti with Pitt knows, there's never been a player who's done that in one game, going over 100 yards rushing and receiving in their history. What about Desmond Reed, Bill?
He is sneaky big and sneaky strong. We know he's quick. So you put that package together, and he's a big-time player. And I love the way he handled the question. Well, what about the big step from Western Carolina to a Power Four conference team? And he goes, I think I can play football, you know. And so at any level, it doesn't matter.
And
I mean, and I love that attitude. I do. I mean, he's confident. He's durable. I know he got banged up a little bit at Cincinnati, but I think he'll be ready to go set.
Yeah, there's a guy playing nose tackle at Cincinnati. His last name, Corleone, Paul. They call him the Godfather there. And he looks like he's 600 pounds. He pancaked Desmond at one point. But he got up. He is tough. And he was running at a speed of almost 21 miles an hour. So we're looking forward to Saturday's edition, 3:30 at Acrisure. And with the fan pregame on the network with Bill Hillgrove, Pat Bostic, Doran Dickerson, Cale Berger, and myself. We'll be on at 1:30. And, Bill, tomorrow night, one of the greatest nights of your life. I hope you feel that way. You and your late partner, the great Dick Grope, will be inducted into Pitt's Hall of Fame. They're going to have well over 500 people in attendance. And Jackie Sherrill's coming back for you, Tony Dorsett, Jimbo Culver. There's a whole list of people that are there to root you on. Hall of Famer Bill Hillgrove.
I am honored because I'm going in with my longtime partner. That, to me, puts it right at the top.
Well, on that note, we'll see you at the Pete tomorrow, and then we'll see you on the South Shore, or the North Shore, coming up on Saturday. South
North. H2P.
H2P. The great Bill Hillgrove on the Big K Morning Show.
Great's a good word.
He still sounds amazing. He just does.
Here's the snap. It's down. The kick by Sauls on its way. That kick is up. That kick is good. With 17 seconds to go, the Panthers have come all the way back to take a one-point lead.
Time to check in with Christy Graver, food editor with Pittsburgh Magazine. And she is also on our video stream. See her on the radio at kdkradio.com. Christy, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. How are you?
I'm doing well. So what is Newsapalooza?
Local news is in the local news this month. The first ever Newsapalooza, it's organized by Point Park Center for Media Innovation, will be held September 26th through 28th. This event is meant to stress the importance of news and remind people that journalists are often their friends and neighbors. Like, I live in Westview. On September 27th, the Boston Globe's now editor-at-large Walter Robbie Robinson, who was betrayed by Pittsburgher Michael Keaton in the movie Spotlight, will speak at the Pittsburgh Playhouse downtown. The weekend also includes hands-on workshops and events with some of Pittsburgh Media Partnership's 29 news outlets, of which Pittsburgh Magazine is one. So, I'll be there. So I've been a journalist for 20 years. So people should get to know your local journalists because we're just Pittsburghers just like you.
I kind of like this Newsapalooza. Mm-hmm. All right. And Pittsburgh, maybe it's just me, but seems to have more than its share of these new distilleries. They're popping up everywhere.
Yeah, first it was breweries, now it's distilleries. So Pittsburgh is the birthplace of the Whiskey Rebellion, which happened 230 years ago, and our rocks glass continues to runneth over. I visited just 12 different distilleries in the area to talk to owners and sample the goods. We've got everything from Lawrenceville's Noir Distillery, Love Katie in Sharpsburg, Still Mill in Swissvale, Lucky Sign in Gibsonia, Inspired by Spirits in Allentown, which has its own speakeasy. It's really cool. So Pittsburgh is producing some really high-class libations. So go check things out. Lots to explore.
You know as well as I, and I say this all the time, you're only a half person from everybody, and you have your best of the Berg, and it's somebody I know very well. It's somebody Pittsburghers know well. In fact, he played linebacker with my son at Duquesne.
That's awesome. This is one of my favorite features that we do, My Best of the Berg. So it's a Q&A with just a local Pittsburgher. In this month, we interview Pittsburgh Steelers long snapper Christian Kuntz. So it's football season. It's the perfect time to get to know him. Like you said, he was an All-American linebacker at Duquesne, and he was also a two-sport star at Chartiers Valley High School. So he is a Pittsburgh guy through and through. During our Q&A, we asked him to reveal his hidden gems, his favorite local meal, and a Pittsburgher, living or dead, who he would ride the incline with. So it's a nice little insight into what people think about Pittsburgh. I don't know, who would you ride the incline with?
Boy, Larry? That's a great, I love that. Who would you, live or dead, ride the incline with?
A Pittsburgher, yes.
It has to be a Pittsburgher, right?
Yes.
You know what? Art Rooney, the Chief.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be good fun? One.
Yeah, I would love to pick his brain.
Just sit there and talk with the Chief, riding up the incline, looking
yeah,
over.
Yeah, have a cigar.
Where the stadiums have always been on the North Shore,
yeah.
Way back to Exposition yeah. Park, Three River Stadium,
wow.
Heinz Field, now Acrisure. Yeah, I love that question. So we'll look for that in Pittsburgh Magazine. Christy, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next Thursday.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Journalist, food editor Christy Graver. I love that. Newsapalooza, that's going to be held September 26th through the 28th at Point Park University. This is the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard with Anchorman Paul Rasmussen and a very special guest. Odd, mysterious, and fascinating history of Pittsburgh celebrating 10 years. Tuesday was recognized by Allegheny County Council. The man behind it, John Shulkowski, has an amazing following and ability to tell stories. And what a rich story of his own in the past year. John, good morning.
Good morning, Larry.
You sound good, partner, and I know you've been through hell and back physically, if you don't mind me
absolutely
asking and sharing with our audience what happened.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as some people might know, that's February of this year, I went in for a standard procedure and ended up not coming out of the hospital for a month and a half with a perforated bowels and diverticulitis problems, and ended up having to go through a life-saving surgery, which put me out of commission for months upon months. Pretty much lost everything that I have, and just kind of recovering. And I'm still in the process of recovery. In fact, my next surgery is in a week and a half, and that should be the final end of this chapter of health issues, all things, you know, going as well as they can. But yeah, in about a week and a half, I have my final surgery to get me reconnected due to these surgeries. For the last 6 months, I've had a colostomy and ostomy, as they call it, which is a horrible thing to go through, especially at someone my age. But I'm lucky enough to go through these things at my age because I'm 42. So it's luckily I was able to make it through. But yeah, I'll tell you what, through this entire experience, the fact that I had Odd Pittsburgh behind me and this kind of community out there of Pittsburghers, people from all walks of life, from all countries, literally, who follow the page, I mean, reached out to me. And if that didn't happen, I don't know if I would have made it, to tell you the truth. I mean, it really kept me going.
And you were truly on the bubble, and you did lose everything, including your job, because for people that don't know, Odd Pittsburgh isn't your job that produces an income like that. This is something you do out of passion.
That's right. So now, well, I mean, there's serendipitous things with all things in life. And, you can only think positive, at least in my case. So my positive message is now, for the first time in over a decade, I can actually concentrate all of my time on Odd Pittsburgh. Let's think about that. I've never concentrated all of my time. I've always, it's only like a tiny little smidgen of my day was Odd Pittsburgh. And then to think about what I've accomplished so far. So now to actually invest my time into doing things like I should have been doing, 10 years ago. I mean, I got books, TV shows, movies in the works, you name it.
Good for you, partner.
We've got to get healthy. Yeah, we've got to get healthy.
John, it's really great news. Tell us, walk us through what happened with County Council. There was a proclamation, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So I was 10 years ago in September is when I had this kind of crazy idea to start exploring all these mysterious stories that you would kind of only briefly read about and never really kind of dig into the actual history. And that's when I started doing this just out of curiosity. And finally was recognized by Allegheny County Council this week on this 10th anniversary, and it was a wonderful proclamation where I was able to accept it, and I gave a speech, and I even read the poem as my speech, the Pittsburgh, My City of Friends, is a great poem from 100 years ago, and it was an incredible opportunity just to see the impact of even people who are on the council that didn't, you don't really put a face to the page. It's always just that guy with the eye patch, the Odd Pittsburgh, Mr. Odd, and don't really realize there's just a guy behind that. And so it's always surprising when people meet me sometimes and they say, wow, yeah, I thought it was a whole team of people or it's just one person. It's just hard to believe that somebody's curiosity can just make that big of an impact. It was so vast amount of people. And no matter, that's the greatest thing about doing something like this is that it doesn't matter what side of anything that you're on, politically or anything. Pittsburgh history really, truly does bring everybody together. It's one thing we can all agree on. We all love Pittsburgh.
I blame you for making me go down the rabbit hole on your Facebook page, because once you get there, you just keep reading these great stories. You got pictures, and these are a lot of news accounts. I've learned so much myself about the history of Pittsburgh. And I want everyone to know that doesn't know that you have a internationally famous relative who is revered in so many circles. Who?
Well, I mean, I got a few, but because I'm a genealogist, so I can tell you a big long list. But the closest one is Peter Tchaikovsky, the composer. And that does kind of keep me busy because I am a composer myself. I still write. In fact, that's one of the things that kept me going, was trying to sit down on my piano and play every day. Just to try to get back into reality. And I've written hundreds and hundreds of songs. And even this year, I've written hundreds of songs. So it's just a matter of that music and the arts and being creative. It's something that's deep in me, and it's hopefully in lots of people, but it's definitely something that keeps me going, that kind of passion and that, that family history, and make those relatives proud, as you could say.
Well, you certainly have Tchaikovsky. Come on, man. Is that really a relative? That's extraordinary.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to say how much I appreciate, John, you're pinning the Pittsburghers' Creed to your timeline on your X profile. I shared that with Paul Alexander a few days ago. He read it on the air. I think it was on Labor Day. I would like to the chance to repeat it if I could at some point this morning. It's a beautifully written tribute to Pittsburgh and Pittsburghers.
Absolutely.
And how do they find you, John?
Yeah, so that, it's funny is that particular poem or that Pittsburghers Creed is usually how I start all of my speeches. So anytime I go somewhere, that's the first thing I read. And the last thing I read is Pittsburgh, My City of Friends, which is that other poem. But yeah, I mean, that's the Pittsburghers Creed is something that, in fact, Mac Miller, who just, we celebrated the remembrance of his passing just a few days ago, messaged me when he was first kind of coming out and said that he just came across that Pittsburghers Creed just like you did and would read it to himself every single night before bed.
Really?
Yeah, that surprised me, but it's just incredible to see things like that, like how just a small little thing that I found interesting, and I'm like, oh, I'm just going to put there on my pinned profile, and then to have someone like him or you or anybody, you know, just to touch you for 5 seconds to kind of give you a thought. You know, that's the idea. It's always been my idea. I always say, memento mori, as they say, you know, remember the dead. You know, they say you die two deaths. One's your natural death. The second time is when someone speaks your name. And by remembering these people of the past, even if it's just for a second, it's as if, you know, you didn't die in vain, you know, and it kind of gives you a way to live on. And so it's kind of a magical thing of doing what I do, is that you're able to literally bring the dead back to life, even if it's just for a minute. At least we can think about them, because hopefully someday, you know, when we're gone, somebody will do that to us, you know, just for a minute, just during the day, be like, hey, that Larry, you remember that guy? Or how about that John, you know, just for a minute. I mean, that's all we can hope for.
Why don't we do this? Why don't we get you to come in studio sometime, spend and tell some stories here, because you got a lot of good stories, a lot of great stories to tell. How many followers do you have now?
Well, Facebook, 150,000, and Twitter, 50,000, Instagram, 75,000.
Wow.
And it grows, you know, every day, every minute of the day. It's growing.
Search Odd, Mysterious, Fascinating History of Pittsburgh, John Schilkoski. Great to catch up. Happy you're on the mend, and we'll look forward to seeing you soon. We'll get you in studio.
Absolutely, Larry. Well, I appreciate it, and my KDK family is that one that's always been keeping me going, you know, so I appreciate you guys, and I can't wait to see you in person.
You got it, brother. All right, take care.
Very awesome.
Yeah. After the news with Paul Rasmussen, next we have the Clemente brothers are here, Paul. Tonight and through the weekend, there are a series of events leading up to Sunday, which is Roberto Clemente Day in Major League Baseball. And in honor of their late father, they have done a lot of great work for charity.
And tonight's a big night.
It is. And we'll let them tell you all about it when they join us in studio next. That never gets old in this town or anywhere else for that matter. Roberto Clemente's 3,000th hit with the voice of the Pirates back then, the late great Bob Prince. And it's a very big weekend for the Clemente family and their fans. And joining me in studio, two of the three Clemente sons, Roberto Jr., who lives here in Pittsburgh, and his brother Luis, who you're in Puerto Rico still, correct?
That's correct, in Puerto Rico.
Thank you guys for coming in. I know this is a very special, for the next 4 days, is going to be terrific. So let's start by talking about this special event tonight. Roberto?
Well, the Ambassador's Dinner is our, you know, fundraiser event that we do annually here, and we're very excited that we're be able to celebrate here in Pittsburgh. We started actually doing this in New York, and now that this September 15th is the officially the Clemente Day for Major League Baseball, and now we have a home here in Pittsburgh. It's going to be every year in Pittsburgh, so we have the opportunity of being able to celebrate this dinner here in Pittsburgh at Heinz History Center.
And let's talk about who will be celebrated and recognized tonight, Luis.
Well, yes, we're recognizing the Josh Gibson Foundation, also Danny Myrtle, and General Mills, who have been supporting the foundation through the clinics, providing cereals everywhere we go.
And you also, in Puerto Rico, you have so many people that come there because of your father, and they expect you guys to keep the baseball tradition alive, right? So you have baseball clinics for kids, and what kind of work do you do in your home country or your home island?
Well, we provide clinics, but also we support veterans. When there's a national disaster, we go out with first responders and help provide, you know, the first aid needs and everything. And then after, because at the very beginning, when something like that happens, you have a lot of people and a lot of organizations helping. But then several weeks after, it starts dying out. That's when we come back again. because we know people are still in need. A lot of people, you know, we were brought up in a way that we don't show or tell what we're doing all the time. You know, it's not necessary. Dad used to visit hospitals. He never took any photographers with him along or anything. So mom taught us, you know, you do good not to be recognized. And so we do it. And it's amazing the impact when you see people saying, oh, my God, there's this lady. They lost her house, went downhill, literally. And she said, I was just telling my husband that everyone had forgotten us. And then all of a sudden, here you are. It's a miracle, you know, and it's like, say, wow, that's a great impact to have and to know the true need of the face of victims of a hurricane or a major disaster in Puerto Rico. You know, we've had several in the past years. So we really make sure that, you know, we're there for them.
And people are still suffering. I mean, yes. After all these years, people are still suffering.
They are, and obviously your father in that moment was reaching out to help earthquake victims from Nicaragua, correct?
Correct.
And you mentioned veterans. I think it's important. I'm going to repeat myself, but I always tell people, I said, you know, Roberto Clemente was a Marine, United States Marine. I'm very proud of that service, too. And a lot of people say, really? And then, Roberto, you told me the other day your dad was a chiropractor.
Yes. Yes.
That's amazing.
I want to say something. That now that you mentioned that, that not everyone realizes that dad was a Marine. We were able to establish a scholarship through the Marines. I wanted to see how we could have something perpetuated through his service. So we were at the Marine Corps Foundation a dinner, right?
Yeah, and that's coming up next Thursday night, actually, in Pittsburgh, the Marine Corps Scholarship Fund.
So we were, exactly, Scholarship Fund. So we were in D.C., and when we were announcing about the scholarship that just got installed, when people heard in that room that that was a Marine that they didn't even know, they missed, you know, they didn't get
the news.
They
missed the whole message because they were all, like, talking. And
they were like, oh, my God, it was all.
It was a celebrating.
They didn't even hear about the scholarship. You know, that's how excited they were. So definitely, yeah, that's one of the things that was very proud of.
And I mentioned John Banaszak, the Steeler, won 3 Super Bowls with the team that got 4 in 6 years. He was a Marine. And he and your father, as far as I know, from this area, are the only 2 Marines who are in the Marine Corps Athletic Hall of Fame.
Oh, yes.
That's amazing. It is amazing. And it's funny because Dad went to basic training, and he actually broke the record for pull-ups. Right?
That doesn't surprise me.
And he had the record for 10 years or something like that. And so someone broke the record, and we didn't know, but, you know, because of the Clemente Museum and Dad being, you know, there with the Marines and the whole history of Dad being a Marine, the guy that broke the record was at a tour at the museum and said, you know, well, we don't know who broke the record. He goes like, you know, he's pointing himself. He's pointing himself, me. You know who that gentleman was? Mr. Dusty Baker.
Really?
Yes. Dusty Baker broke Dad's record of pull-ups.
And I didn't know he was a Marine.
Yeah, he's a Marine. Mm-hmm. And Dusty was a Marine, yes.
And you know how I found out? Was walking through, and this is years ago, when the Clemente Museum opened there in Lawrenceville, mm-hmm. in the old fire station, if you haven't been. And I saw his picture in uniform. And I said, wait a minute. And then I saw the Marine Corps emblem. And I was, like, so impressed by that.
He sent pictures to Duane. He said, I want to send you my pictures of, you know, as a Marine, because no one really knew. He was there with the Astros. And, you know, he said, oh, the place where you were a Marine? Yes, I was a Marine. People didn't even know.
And by the way, the museum is still open, and Duane Reeder is
amazing.
Operating it. And, you know, there's so many people in this town that have such a love for what your father represented. Not just as a great baseball player. He was so amazing. Well, what he represented to so many people in this town and gave, you know, people forget he dealt with a lot of racism and he dealt with issues that are still, you know, very relative today. But people don't think about him in that way either. I mean, he overcame a lot. just to be a baseball player, right? To
Correct.
Break in as a Hispanic player.
He had, yeah, he had two strikes, actually. He did. I mean, you have the African-Americans that went through it, but he had also the cultural barrier as well. He was in the middle. He was right in the middle. He, you know, it was actually the whites and the blacks, both of them look at him like, you know, you're a third-class guy type of deal, you know? So he had to overcome that as well.
Well, we want to talk more. We're with Roberto Clemente Jr. and his brother Luis, and your other brother somewhere in town, right?
Somewhere in town.
And he's Roberto, too.
Hey, Roberto, Roberto Enrique. Yes. All three Ricky. Robertos.
So what do you call him?
Ricky.
Ricky.
We call Ricky. Yeah.
All right, we'll be back with more on the Big K Morning Show. Roberto Clemente Jr., his brother Luis, and the other brother Ricky somewhere in town, but they'll all be together tonight for the Roberto Clemente Foundation Award Ceremony at the Heinz History Center. So again, this is a great way to connect to the community. And how long has it been since you brought this event here?
This is our second year, because it is our second year. Our first one was last year. It was a fantastic venue. Obviously, we all know Heinz History Center is number one historic museum in America. And we're very proud that we can call that home for the dinner.
And talking about, you could tell stories all day about your dad, and no one would ever be bored. We heard the 3,000th hit call by Bob Prince, but you were just telling us off air, you remember a picture of your mom's face watching when that moment happened at Three River Stadium.
I didn't even know. I saw a picture of mom, and I always kind of looked at it, and for me, it was about my favorite set of pictures of her. And then I learned that it was actually right that day, and right after that connected, that 3,000 hit, her reaction, her face, she was beaming, and she looked so beautiful. She would always look beautiful, but that particular moment, then I realized that it was that special moment for both of them when he actually stood at second base, tipping his cap after hitting the 3,000 hit. It was actually a moment for both of them.
I want to share this because I don't know if too many people know. In the Spanish transmission of the 3,000 hit, Felo Ramirez mentions, lo logró, he made it, he got it. But then he says, limpio completamente, which is like totally clean, like he wanted it. That's because the previous evening he hit a blooper, which was shortstop, and they call it an error. That would have been his 3,000 hit, a blooper. And so the next day, that's why it's so important. On his last at bat is when that actually connected of the season, September 30th. That's when he connected his 3,000 hit. So there's this fan that was the previous night, and he recorded it with a home camera, home video. He records that moment of that blooper, but then he somehow snucks into the field with his family on September 30th. He didn't have tickets for the game, so he dressed his two sons as Pirates, and he said they were the honorary bat boys. Okay? So they called Mr. Galbraith at the Allegheny Club, and he says, who are you? Oh, yes, I have the kids like you told me, in front of the security guy, right? So he doesn't know he's not... Mr. Garbutt is saying, you know, what are you doing? Who are you? And, oh, okay, yeah, okay, no problem. I'll let him know that we're good to go. And so they let him in. He stayed with the press. So every on and off the field is recorded. When that hits the 3,000 hit, Willie Mays comes to congratulate him. And then he goes on the tunnel following that, at the moment that he actually got to see mom. And they kiss and hug, and that's where the video ends. It's amazing.
How cool is
amazing.
That?
Amazing.
That video, actually, Dwayne has that video,
yes,
at that museum.
At the museum.
So if you're interested in going to see it, you can go take a look at it at the museum.
Yeah, I highly recommend a visit to the Clemente Museum again in Lawrenceville, and an old fire station there. It's just a cool place to,
yes,
begin with, but it's like hallowed ground
ground zero for Clemente.
Yeah. Honoring your family.
Yes.
And Chuck Berry's with you. Chuck, I've known you for a long, long time, but I'm not exactly sure how you met the Clemente family.
At the time, I was a sports attorney. I was representing professional baseball players, and one of my clients was Manny Sanguian. Manny was Roberto's best friend on the team, and I think people have heard the story about how when the plane went down, he actually went out with the divers and was diving for the body. So Manny introduced me to the family, and it's over 30 years ago. I started working with Luis and with Roberto, and then started representing Vera with Major League Baseball. So I've been with the family, I guess you'd say, for 30 years.
Sports City.
So many great
Sports
connections.
Sports City, yeah. I'm on the board of, down at Sports City as well.
And Roberto used to help me with my golf tournament for the Cancer Society, and I was – so cool. It's telling people, hey, I got Roberto Clemente. Man, this is good. And the story, Luis, the late Tom Walker, Neil Walker's dad.
Yes.
So one day when Neil was just coming up with the Pirates organization, I was seated in Bradenton in the stands next to Tom Walker. And we were doing a little interview that I was recording for the radio. And I knew Tom because his daughter, Carrie, who's married to Donnie Kelly, who's the bench coach for the Pirates, we used to babysit my kids. So I've known Tom and his wife, Carolyn, a long time. And I said, what's it like, Tom, to see your son out there? You know, this is right when he's going to make the team. And he pauses and he starts tearing up. And I'm wondering, he goes, there almost never was a Neil Walker or any of my family. And I'm like, what do you mean? And then he told me the story, how he was with your dad as they were loading the plane, and he was going to go, and your dad told him, no, you stay, go to the New Year's Eve party. I'll see you when I get back. And obviously, the rest is history. So, flash ahead, it's Roberto Clemente Day in Major League Baseball. I happen to be at the game. You and your brothers, your brother Ricky,
right,
were with your mom, Vera, and they introduce you guys. And Neil Walker that night hits a home run over the Roberto Clemente wall. And it just hit me like, wow, this is amazing. And in Pittsburgh, and the fact that so many people have a story about your dad, right? And I'm sure they all want to tell you about it.
Yes.
And you guys probably don't mind, but because it means so much to people. Where were you when you found out about this horrible plane crash?
Well, I remember I was in my aunt's room in our grandmother's home, mom's mother's home, and I hear the phone ring, and you know, I'm in the room, but I already knew because I had told Dad not to get on the plane.
I told him this,
yes. Well, yes.
I want to make sure we don't miss a minute of this. Can you hang on just a moment? Because this is really important. You told your dad don't get on the plane.
Yes, yes. I woke up in the morning, and Dad used to not sleep at night. He suffered from insomnia. So Mom used to put like very heavy like blankets over the window so it would be pitch dark. And so from our room, we had a sliding door. We had going to the room through there, and then there was another door to go into the rest of the home. So I'm kind of touching the bed. There's no one there. So I go to the door, and I see Mom and Dad sitting in the dining room table. So I'm walking, making my way to them. Mom gets up. She doesn't see me, but she goes to the kitchen. But when I get to Dad to say, ask for bendición, which is bless me, it's how we our greeting for our elders is always bendición, which is bless me, and those kids say God bless you. That's how we say hello. And so when I went to say bendición, what came out was, Dad, don't get on that plane because that plane is going to crash.
Hold right there. We got to pick up the story. We're with Roberto and Luis Clemente on the Big K Morning Show from the PJ Fitzpatrick Home Improvement Traffic Center. Powered by Bowser Genesis, Ellen Gamble.
All right. Thank you very much, Larry. In Collier Township, getting reports of an accident on Walker's Mill Road as you head down toward Noblestown Road. Watch out for crews headed to the scene there. You'll find crews working to repair an earlier water main break on the Parkway East inbound just after you try to get past that Edgewood-Swissvale interchange and head for the Squirrel Hill Tunnels. They're blocking the right lane there. You're getting by in the left lane, and the traffic is backing between the Rodi Road and Churchill interchanges as you try to make your way into town that way this morning. We do have an accident reported on the ramps as you're coming off of Route 28 toward either the North Shore Expressway or the other parkway ramps there, and that is backing traffic on 28 southbound between the Highland Park Bridge and the Route 8 exit all the way down to the accident scene. Parkway West inbound stacks to the top of the hill.
Coming up, we'll hear from Marty Griffin, 10 till 2 right now. Our conversation with Roberto Clemente Jr., his brother Luis, and his brother Roberto, Ricky, you call Ricky, him, in town for the Roberto Clemente Foundation Ambassador's Dinner tonight. You can go to robertoclementefoundation.org, get a lot of information about the great work the boys are doing on behalf of their mom and dad. So we left you a moment ago, Roberto. You were talking about you told your father not to get on the plane, even though you didn't realize, this is New Year's Eve.
Correct.
That he would be flying.
No, we had no idea. He decided to fly. He had to send aid to Nicaragua, and then he heard that the aid that he had been sending was not getting to the people in Masaya, the hospital he was actually sending it to. And the Somoza militia was taking the aid and perhaps selling it. But, you know, so he decided to jump on a plane, and we had no idea he was flying. So I woke up excited. We have a party and people flying in from Philadelphia, Allentown, Pennsylvania.
And you're 7 years old.
I'm seven years old. And I know we have a party that night. And when I got to him to ask him for the blessing, what came out was, Dad, don't get on that plane because that plane is going to crash. It was as simple as that. He looked at me and he said, no. I said, Dad, that plane's going to crash. He said, no. I'll see you when I get back. And, just, you know, don't worry. And I remember turning around and just running outside to the door. He came to me and he put his hand on my head. And he looked at me and he goes, I'll see you when I get back. And I really knew that that was not going to happen. So when the phone rang in my grandmother's home, they grabbed mom to get on the phone. When she picked up the receiver, I heard a scream. I mean, mom screamed, and I already knew what had happened. That was reality right there.
And Luis, you said your mom was thinking of a song that day.
All morning, she said she was in the kitchen, she was doing some dishes and stuff, but this song about this whole volleyball team in a box, right? They were traveling on a December 31st, and the plane went down, and no one survived, and they made a song out of that situation. That song just kept circling around in her head all morning, and she usually would drop off that. And she would not leave until she saw the airplane take off. But this particular time, it was a friend of Dad's, Gawitas Colon, who used to work for Goya, who actually insisted in taking him. So they all went. And the thing is, like Roberto said, there's families, friends that were traveling. Dad wanted them to come to Puerto Rico, so we would spend New Year's together and everything. But mom had to leave the cargo area to go to the commercial side, so she never saw the plane leave. So by the time she received the call, she's in denial, but no, he has to be already in Nicaragua or almost landing there because he already left. You know, this was, nothing made sense. So that's why the confusion. But then after that, they took mom to my grandma's, to Dad's mother's house, and, you know, forget it.
And they never found your father's body, right?
No. There were five on that plane. The only one who surfaced was the pilot.
Oh, man. Well, here we are half century later, and in your father and now mother's name, you boys have done a tremendous job in keeping the foundation and the philanthropic efforts alive. And that's a beautiful thing. And I know that people want to help. You can go to robertoclementefoundation.org. So again, tonight is the ambassador's dinner. And then you're doing some, what, on Saturday, you've got some clinics for kids?
Tomorrow we have a day of service. Pirates. We're doing a day of service all morning. Tomorrow, every year, that's one of the things that the Pirates do in honor of Dad, because that's what he did. He's everywhere he was helping. So tomorrow's our day of service. Saturday we have a clinic, baseball clinic, and then Sunday obviously we're celebrating Clemente Day at the ballpark.
Yes. How big is that for you? How amazing that must be for you. And I still can see you guys with your mom standing there behind home plate at PNC Park, one of those special days.
No, it is truly amazing that you know, that respect and honor that is still there for Dad and Mom. Mom was the one that carried the torch right after that accident, and because of her, I believe that legacy is stronger than ever today because of the love and how she carried herself with such grace and love for humanity that her impact was as big as his.
I credit her for all that. The way she raised us is the way Dad would have wanted, and she had a lot of pride in that. She taught us, imagine when you're the son of the great one, you know, she made sure he didn't get to our heads. And to have the vast amount of humbleness to deal with it.
And I think that just fits Pittsburgh so well, because people here love and revere your father for his service, obviously his great play too, and he used that platform to help people. That's the beauty. And our families collectively really appreciate your family. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely.
I'll see you tonight.
Yes. Thank you, sir, for having us, Larry. Absolutely. Yeah. We're looking forward.
RobertoClementeFoundation.org. Please help if you can. And also, I ask Roberto all this time, Luis, when is the movie coming out? We've been waiting half a century. This will be a fantastic film.
Yes. Well, in the time being, there's a documentary that is
This recently. Is a new release.
Yes, new release. Correct. Hasn't been seen it, right?
From here, I have to go to the Latin Film Festival in New York on the 16th. There's a screening on the 17th, but the movie's coming along.
I did give him a sneak peek in terms of timing.
Maybe,
and it looks like we're crossing our fingers that 2025 the movie will start filming.
Make this happen.
All right, we'll start filming 2025.
Yes. We've had 42 for Jackie Robinson.
Yes.
Now we need 21.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yes. We're very excited.
Luis Roberto, thank you guys so much. Appreciate all the great work you do. And Chuck Berry, too. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Why not?
He wants to continue to be the mayor, announce his reelection campaign.
Why not? A lot to do in the city, but one-on-one with the mayor. A lot going on. That was great stuff, Larry.
How about the Clemente brothers just telling that story? Dad, don't get on that plane. It's going to crash. Well,
and by the way, I agree with you, man. That should be a movie, brother. Maybe we're biased, but...
No, but I've seen a lot less movies with a lot less of a story to tell than Roberto. And here we are.
You've made two movies, man. Come on for number three.
Well, you know, Thomas Tull was supposed to make it. Legendary Pictures, you know, he sold that company. But he produced 42 about Jackie Robinson. Why not 21? Anyway. All right, you got the mayor coming?
The mayor.
All right. In studio.
In studio.